From the Draco Vista Studios in Phoenix, Arizona, unlocking secrets of writing, conversing with masters of the craft, and just having a lot of fun. It's the Dragon Page, cover to cover.
Making your life better through technology, I'm Michael Armanegay.
And I am Michael Stackpole. So I'm waiting for you to, like, you know, part of your face slip off and I see the Terminator skull underneath or something.
Well, I am a little disappointed this week. I realized that the 2.0 USB port that I had put in the back of my head right. So that I could download Google directly is not going to work because 3.0 is going to come in and just going to wipe it out.
Oh, there
and then
you
I'm
go.
Gonna be yeah. I'm gonna have to, I just don't know. You can't get ahead of technology. It's moving forward.
Yeah, it's really it's always a problem.
Anyway, so newsy stuff. This is kind of the news section of the show. We might have to actually start getting a bumper just for the news now because it's,
oh, like with trumpets and stuff like
yeah,
that,
yeah,
like a big fanfare
like
and stuff.
Maybe
like
we'll
that.
Just have somebody come in and basically throw. Blow one of those
little kazoos. Yeah,
little
there we go. Can't we have like a cannons going off or something? That would be cool.
I can
too.
Do that too. Yeah, we can do that.
All right.
Anyway, news.
Okay. So one of the things this is kind of old news being made new again, at least as far as I'm concerned, because this is going to be kind of an ongoing experiment for me.
Mm-hmm.
Is last year Amazon announced the Kindle Select program.
Right.
And for those of you who aren't aware of it or hysterical amnesia had blotted it out of your mind, the Kindle Select program is a lending program where if you actually own a Kindle device, mm-hmm. you can't just be reading on another device on the Kindle app. If you own a Kindle device and you are a member of their Prime service, the $80 a year free shipping mm-hmm. service, then you're allowed to borrow one book per month on your device, and that borrowed book will stay there until you're finished it or until you borrow a new book.
Ah.
Okay. And authors are being paid in this way. Amazon has decided on a pool of cash,
mm-hmm.
and for December, which was the first month, they put up $600,000, mm-hmm. which would be divided on a pro rata borrowed share of the individual books.
It's a very interesting idea.
It's an interesting idea. You know, in January they had 700,000. For February they're back to 600,000, and every month they're going to announce what their mm-hmm. pool is. Authors have debated back and forth whether or not it's worth getting into this, because the real caveat to this thing is if you want a book to be available in the Kindle Select program, it has to be exclusive to Amazon. You can't be selling it in the iBook store. You can't be selling it on Kobo. You can't be selling it on Barnes & Noble or any other service. You can't even be selling it on your own website.
Wow.
Okay. So now that would seem like that might be a big risk. However, Amazon has got, depending upon who you listen to, anywhere between 65% and 80% of the market.
Right.
So not having it available to the other 20% of the market,
Who cares?
Yeah, not a big deal.
It might not be a big deal.
Right.
And the interesting thing about this is the first intelligent take or the first intelligent strike towards taking care or at least abating some of the DRM issues and some of the copyright infringement issues. Because if you got a legal way of doing this.
Right.
And you give a simple alternative to someone, because this is key here, people. And all of this, in all the stuff about you know, people stealing all these digital content. I don't care what kind of digital content it is, whether it's movies or music or whatever. The more difficult it is to do it, and if the price point is right and it's easy, people will take the easy, cheap route than the difficult, free route
right.
every single time.
As we've noted here. Piracy occurs when the perceived value of an item and the asked value of an item are out of balance.
Out of proportion.
Okay,
exactly.
Right. If you think it's worth $5 and they want $25, you aren't going to feel bad about borrowing
because
it.
It's worth $15 of my time to me to go right. try and find it illegally.
Yeah.
If it's $5, it isn't worth $5 for me to go find it illegally when I can just hit $5 and I'll just buy the thing. I do that to this day. I rebuy stuff that I could probably find other ways. Because I've already owned it. It's like, oh, I already paid for that. I really don't want to pay for it again. It's too much of a pain in the butt to go get it. I'm just going to buy it again. Fine. Right. It's not that much. And I usually find it, and it's usually when it's on some sort of discount deal. Like it's a 99-cent download, or it's a it's some $1.50 or whatever it is. Like, okay, that's cheap. That's easier than trying to find it and and get it illegally. I'll just get it legally. And I do that most of the time now.
So authors were debating as to whether or not that was worth that. Now, I did not enter any of my books into that system until the end of January. And by the end of January, there were some initial reports coming out that said that the authors who had seen the most success with the Kindle Select program were authors who were making available the first book in a series.
Mm-hmm.
So that, because what they were seeing is that people would borrow the first book and then would buy the subsequent books.
Sure.
Plus, if you enter something into the Select system, you were allowed 5 days in the 90-day period that you're locked in. You're locked in quarter by quarter.
Mm-hmm.
You have 5 days when you can make the item free.
Mm.
So that you're giving the book away for free, hopefully getting a lot of copies out there that people will then read, decide that they like that.
Share with people.
They're not sharing with people because for if you're in the Kindle Prime program, you can borrow it for free anytime.
Oh, okay.
But you would have to buy the subsequent books in the series.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And if you get it for free on one of the giveaway days, you don't have to be in the Prime program. You can get it for free. Anybody can.
Oh, okay. Okay. Okay? Gotcha.
You know, my first time that I'm putting it up for free is February 3rd, which this will be coming out long after, but I'll have other days, and hopefully we'll work it out so that I can announce them in enough time for anyone listening to the podcast to be able to avail themselves of it.
Mm-hmm.
However, that free promotion, again, is to get it out to a lot of people who might not otherwise buy it and entice them to go ahead and do this. So here's the key thing, again, for our authors out there to be thinking about. One of the things that I did before I made the book available in the Select program is I went and reformatted it. So I cleaned up typos, made sure that it looked really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. At the end of the book, at the last page of that first book, I made sure that I had hot links that went to the second book and the third book. So when somebody's read that book and just finished it and gets to that ending and they're going, oh, wow, I really, really liked it, immediately right there is a page with the hot links that they can click on to buy the next two books in the volume. Okay. Plus,
that's just smart marketing.
There you go. Plus, I went ahead and I included a sample chapter from another book.
Sure.
Okay. Because what I saw in last October when I released Perfectly Invisible, I put a sample chapter from a book, that long time slow seller.
Mm-hmm.
I put a sample chapter in the back of that book. And sales spiked on the other one.
Hmm.
I had had the best sales that I'd had in 18 months on that book, and I was getting follow-ons.
Mm-hmm.
So as a marketing tool, giving away samples certainly works, and we've talked about that, and I've seen it in the numbers. So I'll keep talking to you about this experiment just to see how it goes, talking to other authors about this as they've got things in the Kindle Select program. Now, if your book is in the Kindle Select program, people can still buy it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to just borrow it. I mean, they can buy it to keep their own copy. So, you know, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, how many borrows there are, what this actually turns into in terms of money for us.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to be an interesting experiment going forward. And the reason to do it, and quite frankly, this is what I'm looking at. Okay. And this is just between us. Don't tell anybody in Amazon.
Okay. We won't.
Okay. Look, there is absolutely no purpose. When I sell a book and sell it off of my own website, okay, the first 2 months, I get decent sales off of my website. I get decent sales off of Kindle. I get decent sales off of Barnes & Noble and other things.
Mm-hmm.
So if I've got a book in a series, I leave it out of the program for the first 6 months. I get a couple other books in the series going or set up to benefit from this sort of publicity. Then I pull it off of my website. I pull it off of these other websites. I can put it into the Kindle Select program. Mm-hmm. I only have to leave it there for a limited amount of time.
Sure.
So
it's not a permanent
thing. It's not a permanent thing. It's quarter by quarter. And what I will probably do is rotate titles in and out.
Well, yeah. So that way you can see what works and what's more, what does better in,
right.
in something like that.
So, right.
Because there are going to be books that are going to lend themselves better to that kind of a program.
Right. Sure. And also, as you're looking at these things, the things which are critical, and there have been a number of really good blog posts about this coming into this year, is a lot of authors are making the mistake of writing one book and flogging that all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to writing one book, giving it a gentle little shove, writing a second book, giving that a shove, a third book, giving that a shove, and allowing the accumulated weight of your work to build up momentum for mm-hmm. you. And that's what you need to be doing. I just, Jane Friedman just picked up a comment that I had made, someone had blogged about last August. And I got a bunch of retweets off of it because she mentioned it in an article. And she quoted me as saying that Amazon and Barnes & Noble have 85% of the ebook market. Better to spend your time writing more than spending time chasing the other 15%.
Absolutely. That's brilliant, actually.
And this is what we all need. We need to keep our eyes on the ball.
Yes.
If you're thinking, if your goal is to have one book out there and to flog that book so everybody will read it, go ahead. Good luck to you. If your idea is that I can have a career, I can do something I enjoy doing, and I can bring out a book a year in a series or two books a year in a series, you know, as my spare time activity, okay, mm-hmm. then this is, you want to make sure that production, getting those books out there, is going to be what's paramount for you.
Right.
This is what I like about your situation. You've already taken one book and you're going, okay, I can split it into two. And knowing you, as you're writing those books, you're going to see other places where short stories kick out, other places where novels mm-hmm. follow on. You'll develop the world. You'll be able to tell these different things.
Exactly.
That's what's critical. That's how you're going to build up that readership.
Yeah, exactly. No, and I agree with that completely, because the reality is that the days of being able to write a book and becoming a millionaire, those don't exist really anymore. Unless you're Heidi Fleiss and you're writing your memoirs, or you get paid billions of dollars to do something, you know, one off like that. But you'd have been something notorious to get there
right,
in the first place.
Right. Yeah. And chances are, you know, those days probably never really existed.
Yeah. You know. Wasn't I just reading something about that? That a couple of the book deals, they were promised these gigantic advances, and the advances never really came to fruition. They got a little bit of it, but they never got all of it because the sales fell flat right off the bat. And I cannot for the life of me remember which book I'm talking about.
Oh, it's entirely possible for a publisher to kick your books back and give you and say, yeah, we're not gonna.
Yeah, they promised them a certain amount of royalties if as long as certain sales percentages were
right,
hit.
Right.
The sales percentages never came to pass, so they got like a fraction of what they were actually promised and what they were reported on. It was some big book. I can't remember what the book is.
It's book contracts looking like athletic contracts.
Yes, exactly.
You have a roster bonus and you have all of these different things.
Exactly.
And all
they
have to do is cut it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's exactly what it was. And it's like they signed it because it's like, oh, of course it's going to sell millions because, you know, and they tell.
And this is one of the trends that is happening. And this is another discussion that goes on out there, which is that advances are falling because publishers are realizing that, you know, it's really difficult for books to earn advances mm-hmm. back. So they're trying to cut their losses really close to the bone. Unfortunately, what that means is, that since they're putting less at risk, they're less motivated to try and promote.
Right.
You know, so for us with our own books, you know, we've got skin in the game. One of the reasons we've been talking to you guys about compiling a list of reviewers and trusted people is because once you have that list, you've got a place to send your books mm-hmm. out because you've got skin in the game. You've got a reason to go ahead and promote.
Right. Exactly. That's a good place to stop. We need to take a quick break, and we'll come back with more right after
Absolutely.
This.
Dragon Moon Press, bringing you some of the most exciting new authors in sci-fi and fantasy. Their titles open new worlds and bring unforgettable characters to readers just like you. Bring the magic and wonder of dragons to your child with Dragon's Fire, Wizard's Flame by Michael R. Menengay. Write your own story with a complete guide to writing fantasy. Books by Dragon Moon Press, sci-fi, fantasy, and beyond. Order these titles from your local retailer or visit the website at dragonmoonpress.com.
All right, writing. I got an iPhone finally.
Oh, very good.
Yes, I did. And it's interesting. It's an interesting device. And I've already basically pulled Notepad up on it. And good. I've been doing a lot of little, just kind of picking it as I think of things the day kind of things. And for that, it's been fairly powerful, other than the fact that it's really difficult to type on those teeny tiny little keys.
It can be. Yeah. Yeah. No, I think the thing which is really cool about smartphones, about because I've had an iPad Touch or iPod Touch for as I refer to it, my iPad Micro.
Yes.
I've had one of those.
Everybody does.
Yeah. I had one of those for years, and Notepad or other little notebook programs are really, really useful for carrying around, as opposed to carrying around one of those little moleskin notebooks. Mm-hmm.
Sticky notes is nice too.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so you have these. What's critical about it, and I'm glad that you've got it, is that gone are the excuses that we've had for a long time of not getting any work done.
Right.
You know, when you have your iPhone and you're sitting down at Starbucks catching a coffee and eating a scone, and, you know, because you got 20 minutes here, and as you were driving to get your coffee, an idea occurred to you about your story, now you got a place to write it down.
Right.
Now you've got something
especially to go ahead. Especially with Siri. Because with Siri, you can just basically kick it on, Notepad, Siri, and then just start dictating.
But you realize I hate you, right? I don't have one with Siri.
You don't have Siri? Yes. Oh, no, I don't have Siri. Siri is awesome.
Yeah.
Siri is my girlfriend.
Well, there you go.
She's awesome. She's hot.
I saw her first. But it's really important to remind yourself that you always can write, and you need to avail yourself of any of those opportunities. Mm-hmm. And that's critical, and that's good. That's good that you've got that shot.
Yeah, absolutely. So, all right, you had some stuff you were getting into last week, and we kind of got derailed.
Yeah, we did get derailed, but that's okay, because that was good, sort of good baseline for stuff. So one of the things that is fairly critical when you're sitting down to write, just before you're sitting down to write, is to ask yourself a question. The scene that I'm going to write, in the planning phase, or you're sitting down writing, or this also works in the revision phase, ask yourself, what is this scene going to do for me?
Mm-hmm.
Why, not why is this scene here, but what does it give me? Mm-hmm. And there are a couple things that you absolutely need. One, the scene needs to move the story forward.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's gotta progress as things go forward.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the second thing,
Clancy is bad about that, where he will just spend a chapter describing a room just because it's a cool room and he wants to describe it for us.
Right, and you don't feel that impetus to get things going.
Yeah,
forward.
It didn't go anywhere. It's just we just heard about the room. It's like, okay, can we get back to the story, please?
Right, and part of the problem is that Clancy does not do characterization.
Right.
Okay, and that is a big thing. And the second thing you need for is really, you need to identify those elements in this scene, those touchstones in this scene, that are going to build momentum for character growth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, let's separate the two things out. Okay, to move the story forward, if the characters have got to get from the coast to the mountains, okay, then that scene could be on the road as they are getting from the coast to the mountains. Okay, that moves the story forward.
Mm-hmm.
If we see refugees fleeing, you know, from the mountains toward the coast,
right.
Okay, that's moving the story forward. We're getting more information. Our picture of what's going on is becoming refined, and that's very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is, how does that impinge on our characters? And you got to remember something, that characters are the windows through which we see the story.
Mm-hmm.
So de facto, characters filter everything. Characters have to have a reaction to everything. It has got characters are not journalists. Mm-hmm. They are not disinterested. They are not a documentary camera. Okay. And you have to give your characters a chance to react to things and to have their behavior grow through interactions with mm-hmm. things. Now, sometimes it's just going to be tiny. Okay. Sometimes, you know, so it's an on the road chapter. You decide that brigands are going to attack them.
Okay.
Okay. And mainly it's an action kind of thing. You know, they slice things up mm-hmm. and everything like that. And then as they're going over the bodies, you know, looting them as you will do after you've killed the bad guys. Right.
I do. I
mean, right.
It's important.
That's what I do all the time.
That's
exactly. You take no prisoners and loot the bodies.
That's right.
Yeah.
We get the women later. But
that's a whole economy. That's right. Yeah. Get the women later because they kick our asses otherwise.
That's right.
So.
Wow.
But
off the rails.
Right. But you have this character is going over a body just wondering why these people were so savage, these barbarians, mm-hmm. why they were so savage. And somebody else is with him and says, well, you see the way his long hair was braided at the temple, and you see that he's got seven beads there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those seven beads means that he's gone on seven raids. And he successfully killed seven men, and the different colors of the beads or the designs on the beads tell you the different tribes of the men that he's absolutely killed.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And so,
I'm going to use that.
Go ahead. Go ahead and steal
awesome.
It. But the point is that, you know, this is, you know, and the other character in explaining this, sure, you're developing your world and mm-hmm. you're bringing it out. But the other character in explaining it says, you know, look, I was once up in the mountains and I was in one of their villages. You know, mm-hmm. I was delivering a ransom. So, you know, I wasn't a captive. But I remember the circle of elders. You had these century old, crippled old men whose heads were bowed not by age, but by the weight of the beads that they wore in their braids.
Wow.
And they were venerated. You know, and so now what you've got is you're just sort of describing that culture.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got this younger character who participated in that fight going, thinking about, this is not how I was raised. You know, on the coast, yeah, I'm a warrior, but for us, it's part of that royal tradition. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's a status symbol, but not in the same way. You know, the prince has got his thing. He doesn't deal with the military. His younger brother, you know, who would normally be the crown prince, is in charge of the military. We build that wall there. We do all these different things. And these are, or, you know, he's a member of a military religious order. And so for him, killing enemies is a sacrament. And it's mm-hmm. a way of showing glory to God and thanks to God for giving him those skills. Whereas for the barbarians, it's a way for them to say that they are superior, that they do this, that they do that. And the other guy can say, you know, sometimes the beads are actually made out of the teeth of the guys that they've killed, or, you know, all sorts of stuff. So you can have all sorts of cool things.
A lot of little intricacies in there.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Wow.
But the character...
Somebody is so going to steal that. That is really good.
We'll all use it. We'll all use
we'll
it.
All use
we'll
it.
All use it.
Okay. It's all,
I'm
it's
making
good.
Notes. Yeah.
There
so
we go.
Yeah. But the point is that while that information is imparted, that's giving you an encyclopedia entry.
Mm-hmm.
What you need to do is have the character react to that, have the character think about that, all right, and have the character then use that information and how he feels about that information, you know, later on.
See, that's almost, to me, that's almost world building, or better yet, probably society building. It's because you're building those elements that is the backstory that your characters are going to be playing in.
Right. But you have to remember that all characters are reflective of their society.
Well, that's
okay?
True.
You know, and so you have to have a character be true to how he was brought up.
Mm-hmm.
And then he has to modify his behavior for whatever reasons. I mean, let's say we're doing a World War II story. Okay. Mm-hmm. And we've got a guy who is from the depths of Alabama. All right, a white guy from the depths of Alabama. He is a sharpshooter, and he is as prejudiced as the day is long. Mm-hmm. And back in World War II, our units were segregated unless you were in George Patton's
sure.
Third Army. But let's say he's trapped behind the lines, behind German lines, and he's fighting the Huns. They all believe in an Aryan paradise, so they mm-hmm. believe that African Americans are just as much dirt as he does. And lo and behold, it's a troop of African Americans that come along and save this guy's ass.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's kind of Tuskegee Airmen thing going. Yeah.
But then that character is going to have to deal with that impact on his life.
Right.
And whether it's he makes
And that's the, great conflict. Exactly. And that's great turmoil. Exactly. That makes good story.
And that's great character growth.
Mm-hmm.
How he decides to do things.
Absolutely. You know,
and that's very,
and
very
then you
important.
Throw him back into his old world where he's having this conflict of conscience
right.
because of what happened to him there, and he's back in his old society trying to reintegrate into yep. what he was brought up with.
And does he reintegrate? I mean, does he abandon the lesson temporarily and then get called on it, you know? Mm-hmm. Or there's any number of different things that you can do. Rex Stout did the Nero Wolf mysteries.
Oh, yeah. I haven't read them, but I've heard.
They're brilliant. They're brilliant. But what Rex Stout did in one of the stories, I forget which one it was, and someone will undoubtedly leave his voicemail and tell me.
Oh, I'm sure.
In one of the very early ones, there's a murder at a restaurant, and Nero Wolfe goes to talk to the restaurant staff, who are all African Americans, and they're referred because it was written 37 or whatever. I think they're all referred to as Negroes.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, and he basically gives them this long speech about how at least one of them knows something which is critical to solving this mystery, and they better come forward and give him the information, and he explains why.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Stout, 30 years later, mm-hmm. in the 60s, has a client come to Nero Wolfe, and that client was one of the busboys.
Huh.
To whom that speech was given.
Wow.
And he wants Nero Wolfe to help get his son out of trouble because his son was dating a white girl, and this is in the 60s, mm-hmm. and there was a lot of trouble. And Nero Wolfe says, no, I'm not going to take this sort of case. And the guy quotes back to him the speech that Nero Wolfe gave back then, and Nero Wolfe is stuck on a dilemma and agrees to help out.
Wow.
It was brilliantly done, and that is character growth, and that mm-hmm. is how it is done exceptionally well.
Mm-hmm.
So remember, your characters are the filter. They are what goes on, and you have to view not only, you're not only looking at the images and you're not only hearing the sounds. You have to understand how people understand what's going on emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
Think of emotions as an eighth or ninth sense, however you want to number them or whatever.
Sure, sure.
And it's just as important as vision, just as important as hearing. So think of the emotional impact. And then, we talked about that throw ahead sheet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If this scene is going to have emotional impact, you need to say, remember to touch on that, expand on that, and you put it on your throw-ahead sheet, and then you work out some other scenes we'll be able to do it. You make little notes on your outline saying two chapters down the line, draw a parallel between barbarian beads and X,
uh-huh.
And you go forward.
Wow. Very cool.
Yeah. That's a lot of fun stuff.
There's good stuff, and I think that's a great place to break before we dive into something else. It's going to take us 15 minutes to get through. So, okay. Excellent, excellent. If you have questions, you have comments, you want to just contact us, whatever, the number's 206-350-READ. That's 206-350-7323. Find us on Facebook.
Twitter.
Twitter, Second Life. We're all over the place, guys. You know where we're at. Like us on Facebook, please.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dragon Page, we got a Facebook page now. Yay. Yep. Alrighty, we will talk to you again in a few weeks. Talk to you. Bye.